Over time, what we want to do is we need a little bit more income to hire more people. Ideally, we'd like to have 3 virtual assistants working for us full time, so that way there's no gaps. And then at that point, we can vacation whenever we want to and be completely hands off. That is the goal.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I'm your host, Justin Dixon. And today on the podcast, I've got Alex Sabio. He is a healthcare worker, has been working in healthcare as a respiratory technician for the last 21 years. And we talk about his journey kind of through COVID as a respiratory rep and being literally on the front lines, as well as kind of at the same time investing in single family real estate out of state. He lives in Southern California and he's buying these single family houses in North Carolina, Ohio, Texas, Alabama. And then we talk about how he sold all 20 of his single family houses and shifted all that investment into short-term rentals. We talk about some of the markets that he's in, and we end the episode with a little bit around the fund that he started and a hotel that he actually invested in. So really interesting journey. And he's doing all this while he's still working full-time as a W-2. So super fascinating. So let's get Alex on the pod. Alex, man, welcome to the podcast. Happy to have you on.
Hey, Justin, how's it going? Thanks for having me on. Really excited to be here.
We're going to have some fun here. So why don't we kick things off? Give a little bit of an intro of you, your background, and then we'll unpack some stuff.
Yeah, sure. Hey, everyone, how's it going? Alex Sabio, married father of 4, live here in Southern California. Wish I had a better story to tell everyone, like the gurus who go from 0 to 100 rentals in 1 year. But to tell you the truth, that's not my story. And I think my story is a lot more common and what most Americans go through, lots of ups and downs. I do have a W-2 job. I've been in healthcare for the past 21 years, still work full time doing that, and have made real estate, it's gone from my side gig to hopefully my main gig here in a little bit here. But yeah, that's my story.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it's always good to hear, you know, the aspirational guests that are crushing it at the Grant Cardone level, but definitely on their way. And then it's always good to have people that are on their journey, right? And that's kind of where you are. So in the healthcare space, what do you do in healthcare?
I'm a respiratory therapist. So during COVID, we're the front of the front line of everything. Yeah. So we're the ones managing ventilators and people that have breathing issues. My specialty now specifically, I like working with premature babies and pediatrics. Kind of transitioned working with adults and going into pediatrics and acute right now.
Wow. I would imagine 3 years ago was crazy for you, just not knowing what the heck was going on and being literally on the front lines of dealing with respirators and all of that. I imagine that was quite crazy.
Yeah. And that's a big part of my why. We didn't know where we were going there. And you saw people getting infected, people dying left and right. Like it was pretty much a war zone. And that lit a fire under my butt and said, we got to figure it out and find a way out of here, or at least have a way out. So,
yeah. Well, let's talk a little about that kind of shift, if you will. I guess, how did you get exposure to real estate in general? Like, had you always been thinking about real estate investing, or like what kind of got that spark lit?
It really was my grandparents, to tell you the truth. They had 12 kids. They moved here from the Philippines in the 1970s and made some good money investing in homes back then. It's kind of weird, even though they had 12 kids, nobody picked the real estate bug. They had tons of grandkids. Nobody picked up the real estate bug either. But for some reason, I always thought that was cool that they had homes. They're boarding care facilities. And so it was weird. I bought my first home in 2003, I think right out of school. I think everyone wants to live the American dream. So you buy your own primary home. And I remember the home going up like $100,000 within the first year. And it was like double what I was making at my salary. And then my grandma told me, and this is the most successful person I ever met in my life at that point, and she's making good money for herself. And she said, you know, I never really made good money until I invested in real estate. Mm. And it's not like she was giving me mind-blowing advice that I hadn't heard before, but sometimes there are things in your life that happen where it just sticks with you. And I knew at that point, I was like, you know what? I think I need to see this out. And so been sticking with it ever since. Like I said, made a lot of mistakes along the way, but still sticking with it.
Got it. So you bought your first kind of primary residence in 03. And then did you do any transactions or any investing kind of in the last 20 years other than what you've been doing recently? Like, did you kind of buy throughout that period, or how did that all go?
I was buying throughout that period. I sold my primary home, made a nice profit. And that was probably the worst mistake. One of the worst mistakes I made, because then I took that money and then I put it into another primary home. Then I said, wait a minute, let me pull some of that money out and start investing. So at a certain point, we just start buying real estate out of state, and there are long-term rentals. And I'm sure a lot of you viewers know this, you know, long-term rentals, you're not really killing it, right? It's a long-term investment. You might make $100, $200 a month if you're good, and you just kind of hang on to it. But at the time, I mean, I was actually negative cash flowing on a lot of the properties. And then 2008 hit, and we all know what happened with that, the Great Recession. And then I pretty much fell underwater. And that slowed my investing quite a bit. I think there was a period of probably maybe 7 years or so where I didn't buy a home, but I still kept a lot of these long-term rentals. And with real estate, it's very forgiving. If you hang on to it long enough, the rents go up, tenants pay your mortgage down, and the appreciation goes up over time. So then I had some money to go into short-term rentals.
Got it. You were buying them out of state. Where were you buying these rentals? And what were they? Were they single family, or were they, you know, multi-units? What was the story?
Yeah. Justin, I was all over the place, man. I wish somebody would have shook me up and said, just focus in one area, right? Yeah. So I was in like North Carolina, in Durham, North Carolina. I had some in Cleveland, Ohio. And I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, but I never wanted to visit Cleveland, right? But the homes were like cheap, and you know, the rents were decent. I was in Houston, Texas. I was in Huntsville, Alabama. So kind of just scatterbrain, you know, like kind of going through the FOMO, like someone post online, like, hey, I'm making a killing here. And I'd be like, oh, let me go check that market out. So I'd had multiple homes in different markets there too.
And these were single family?
Yes, yes. I never got into like a large multi or anything like that.
It sounds like you were still working at that point, obviously. And I guess, how did you balance finding these deals and operating them out of state? Because you've got a W-2. It's not like you're working from home as a respiratory therapist or even working in healthcare, right? So you don't even have that flexibility of having your laptop and being in front of a computer to kind of underwrite deals and things like that. How did you balance that and figure it out?
Well, the one thing, I don't sleep, and I kind of obsess with a lot of stuff. But, you know, I would go through these periods where like, okay, I'm ready to invest, and I would just dive in on research. But the thing is, with long-term rentals, I was flipping them to property management companies. So the work was upfront, and then after that, they were pretty passive. And maybe that was my mistake initially. I probably should have had a lot more hustle to begin with, and then led into more passive investments. You live and learn. Like I said, we've made mistakes along the way. And I don't even know if that was a mistake in itself, because I did learn a lot from it and gain some equity in the long term.
Yeah. I mean, if you're learning a lesson, whether it's a good or bad lesson, right, it's always something that you're learning from. So you can figure it out and use that as you move through your journey. So you mentioned short-term rentals. I want to learn a little bit more about that. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick sponsor break. So we'll be right back.
Whether you're trying to hire a full-time employee or a contractor to fill a gap, Hire Tomorrow can help. Hire Tomorrow is a boutique recruitment firm that has successfully filled sales and marketing, human resources, and technology positions with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500. If you're struggling to find the right talent, check out HireTomorrow.com or reach out to recruiting@HireTomorrow.com to see how they can help.
We are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast with Alex. So before the break, we were talking a little about kind of your initial journey being in the healthcare industry and starting to invest in single family houses outside of your area in Southern California in a multiple different markets. So you mentioned before the break about property management and kind of turning over single family houses to these property managers. So maybe walk us through one of your early deals, because my first investment was a duplex. It was still in state, but on the exact opposite side of Pennsylvania in Pittsburgh when I was living in Philadelphia. So I understand kind of how that works, but maybe talk about it multi-state. It's not like you're going to drive to Huntsville, Alabama. You're going to have to get on a plane and all that fun stuff. So how did you start to build your out-of-state team to find these deals and then acquire them?
Yeah, it was definitely a lot more difficult back then. I think the first purchase was 2004, and the internet wasn't as big as it is now. But I did do the research initially there, and there was a local RIA, and there was a group talking about they were selling turnkey investments. And at the time, I learned about the 1% rule. And I think the median price of a home here in Southern California was around $250,000. What a fool. I should have bought like a ton of them back then, right? Right, right. But at the time, I'm like, 1%, there's no way things are renting for $2,500. $100. So let me go out of state, and these homes are like, there's homes out there, $120,000 to $130,000 that rent for $1,200 or $1,300. Yeah. So I started doing some research, and I liked North Carolina. I liked the RTP area, Research Triangle Park, a lot of jobs there. And I said, let me take a look at that. So I found brand new construction. I think it was Beezer Homes that was the builder. And I liked the fact that it was turnkey. I liked the fact that it was going to be from a distance and I wasn't going to have to deal with a lot of repairs, at least initially. Found the right realtor. That's the first step, right? Someone that works primarily with investors and that have sold a lot of these, and someone that had a property management company that they work with. I lucked out. I actually had the same tenant for 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah, that never happens, right? I even tried to sell her the home. She didn't want to buy the home. I don't know why. But yeah, I think I bought it for $130,000, somewhere around there. Back then, they were putting no money down. Mm-hmm. There were 80-20 loans. So I think I got that house for like $300 out of pocket. It was hardly anything. I mean, it was negative cash flowing initially, probably a couple $100 a month. It wasn't until maybe year three or so where I finally kind of started breaking even. Cause like I said, the rents go up over time. Yeah. And then I was able to refinance into better terms. And then just slowly over time, it was just going slowly up with rents. And she made the rent payment, I think, every single month except twice.
Okay.
Those two times I kind of forgave her and I said, okay, like I'm just going to increase the rent $100 next year to make up the difference. And yeah, it was extremely passive. She took care of everything. It was an amazing investment for me.
And I think you mentioned something that's really important, because that's one thing that I was told, because I started investing while I was still working, and working with an agent, especially if you want to get into like single family or small 2 to 4 units, you're going to be working with some type of a real estate agent. Typically, they're a normal residential agent, but you really want to ask them and let them know that you're an investor. You're not going to live in this house. So you need to find a real estate agent that has worked with investors, especially if you're out of state, because you know, they're going to be your boots on the ground. I don't know how you kind of built that relationship, but I lucked out. I just literally found somebody on Google and told them what I was trying to do. And, you know, they were an investor themselves, and they were willing to kind of tour houses, take videos, and then send them to me. And then I did all the underwriting, obviously. So yeah, just people listening that are open to or looking at kind of buying some stuff out of state, especially single family, you definitely want to find a real estate agent that's got some experience working with investors, because it's not the same. And also the houses aren't typically the same that you're looking at, although you went with new construction, so it would be kind of similar. But yeah, definitely make sure that they're open to working with investors as far as that goes. So how many properties have you acquired kind of in that 04 to kind of present from the single family? And are you still going after single family?
Yes and no. I'm open to any investment just as long as the cash flow is strong. I think I counted, I probably have acquired like over 20 properties, bought and sold, did 1031 exchanges. I mean, currently we have 6 short-term rentals in our portfolio right now.
Mm-hmm. So you sold all your kind of buy and holds and you're shifted all that to short-term rentals?
Yeah, I remember reading an article where someone was like, hey, I sold all my long-term rentals and bought short-term rentals. And I said, what an idiot that guy was. And then I started looking more into it. I mean, once we purchased our first short-term rental and it was cash flowing like crazy, we said we need to get more of these. And it had was cash flowing amazing. Surprisingly, we were enjoying it. It was a lot easier than we expected. And it gave us an amazing tax break. Like we're not paying anything in federal income taxes anymore. So
got it. So talk more about kind of the transition to short-term rentals. And then, because that's an area that I'm interested in as well. I've started to kind of dig into that because I've been mainly focused on kind of the larger multifamily syndication stuff. So talk about that first short-term rental. Like, how did you find it? How did you underwrite it? Because that's always, you know, you're underwriting different terms because you're not looking at monthly rent. You're looking at average daily rate, right? So maybe walk us through that first kind of initial short-term rental. Where was it and all that?
Yeah, work hard, invest harder. I love that name because that's what I was doing. I was working really hard. And my CPA was like, you're getting taxed like crazy. And you should think about short-term rentals because I think you'll get like a pretty cool tax break from it because you're materially participating. It's very active and you'll get a lot of hours from that. And I said, okay, let me take a look at multifamily instead. I wasn't even listening to her.
Let me not do that.
Yeah. So I started doing multifamily. And the one thing about multifamily, you learn underwriting pretty good.
Yeah.
Right. And you have all these projections and everything. And at the time, I was trying to purchase a multifamily property, and it just, the numbers weren't great. Right. Especially when you're brand new, like nobody wants to speak to you. They're going to send you all the deals that everyone's already turned down. Right. And so I'm analyzing all these deals, and I'm like, we were getting ready to purchase a 60 unit in Kentucky. It was me and two other investors. And I think the purchase price was $1.2 million. And I think it was going to generate $80,000 a year in gross rents. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, I really don't want to do this, man. This doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, when you're trying to do multifamily, one of the things I recommend everyone is just networking with as many investors as possible, hear their story, what they're doing. And I remember one investor, she said, yeah, that deal is crap. I wouldn't invest with you. I said, no, okay, I get it. She says, because right now I own three Airbnbs and it's generating me $24,000 a month. I said, yeah, but what's your take home? You know, you must have a lot of expenses, property management. I had no clue. She says, dude, you're not listening to me. Three Airbnbs, my monthly profit's $24,000 a month.
Wow.
I said, okay, tell me more about it now, right? Yeah, I do what everyone does. They go online, they go on YouTube, watch every single video, go on Bigger Pockets, whatever it is, listen to podcasts. And then I said, okay, where's the best place to invest in? Someone said the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. I said, where the hell is that? I don't even know where it is.
Right.
I don't even know where Tennessee is. Start doing a little bit more research, found a realtor who specializes specifically in just selling short-term rentals. She doesn't do primary homes. She just deals with investors who want to buy vacation rentals. And she kind of gave me all of the data that I needed. She said, these are the homes. And not only that, she owned, I think at the time, five short-term rentals herself in that same city. And that's when I started getting more trust. I said, okay, I started doing a lot more research, and everyone kept telling me the same exact thing about this market. So the first home I bought was $625,000. What I found is you could do 10% down at the time. The terms were a lot easier. So $60,000 out of pocket. It came fully furnished, brand new construction. So that was one of the things that made me feel good. Yeah. And then she said, this one will probably generate you $100,000 a month conservatively. It did generate $130,000 the first year, $135,000 the second year. But the one thing she told me, she said, because the interest rates were so low, she said, you'll probably keep 40% of this on the low end. And so in my mind, just the quick math, I said, okay, this is going to cost me about a little over $60,000 to purchase. If it generates $100,000, I'll profit $40,000, 40% of that $100,000. And in my mind, just the back of the napkin math, I'm like, okay, $60,000 invested, $40,000 return. I would do that every single time. I don't know why. And it actually worked out better than expected. So once you start, like I said, once we got a bug of the first one that was generating good cash flow, gave us good tax breaks. Like I said, we're not paying anything in taxes anymore.
Yeah.
Then we just start snowballing, sell those long-term rentals that are barely cash flowing and get more of the same exact thing. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. So did she share kind of like what the, like when you plug it into like your Excel doc or whatever, however you analyze these deals, obviously you've got to like track vacant occupancy and, you know, average daily rate, right? So did she kind of just use her local knowledge to kind of share that? Cause that, when were you doing this? I don't know if like AirDNA or like all these other websites that were, that exist now were available.
She did have some sheets, and they called them their AirDNA sheets. And then we looked at, I remember, the occupancy, the average daily rate, depending on the month, so on and so forth. The reason why we felt comfortable with it is because we actually went and visited the market to meet her. And we tried to book an Airbnb in that market, and we couldn't find one. Like, there was just so many people that were booking Airbnbs at the time that we were paying like $600 a night.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, I'm like, and this was further away, had one less bedroom, and was a little bit more run down than the one I was going to purchase. So then in my mind, I'm like, okay, if I'm renting this one out for this much, this one's probably going to rent out more.
Yeah.
So that's kind of when we saw the light.
Got it. And how long have you had that property?
Almost 3 years ago today, August 3rd, 2020.
Oh, wow. So you bought it during COVID. And so you're dealing with COVID as on the front lines, being a respiratory therapist, plus you're burning the midnight oil trying to buy short-term rentals. I'm always curious when I hear people kind of balancing work, life, and investing. How did you kind of balance all of that? Obviously, you've got a family, it sounds like. And so like, how did that all shuffle out? Because was your wife on board with your kind of goals and like the investing piece?
Well, yeah, because our CPA said, Tanya, you have to retire. She was all for that. And she's also a respiratory therapist. And remember during COVID, they shut our schools down.
Yeah.
And all of our kids were pretty much being homeschooled. And we didn't know. We were like, I don't know how healthy this is. And I know we take light of COVID now, but remember in the heart of it, we didn't know how long this was going to be. Like, is this a permanent thing? And so we wound up saying, the amount of cash flow it's generating and the amount of tax benefits that it's going to give us, it's best you retire. And so 3 months in, she was able to walk away from her W-2 job. That was a huge accomplishment for me, right? And she was able to deal with the guest communication and stuff like that. We do have automated systems that answer all the guests for you. Nowadays, we've kind of scaled up and we hire virtual assistants from other countries to help us run the day-to-day operations. So it doesn't matter where you're, like my Airbnbs are 2,000 miles away. It doesn't matter if you're 15,000 miles away, you could manage it from a distance. And it doesn't have to even be you. Like guests don't even know it's not you, you know? So, but yeah, the balance, it's challenging, right? Like all of this is going to be challenging and you just got to work through and grind it and you start figuring systems out. So we're fortunate enough to find lots of software. That's kind of the one thing we really liked about it. There was tons of solutions out there that we had no idea. There's all these softwares that automated a lot of the processes.
Walk through a little bit, if you're open to it, sharing a little bit about how you kind of set up your systems and VAs and how that works, because we are in the world of technology and VAs weren't even a thing back a handful of years ago. So how did you kind of set all that stuff up so that you can run it as passively as possible, even though short-term rentals are, you know, can be a lot of work if you're trying to manage it yourself?
Yeah, kind of like my investment career, I wish I had a better story to tell you, but I kind of stumbled upon that. You know, I wish I would have learned better along the way. The one thing is you can have the best virtual assistant on earth. If you don't have the systems and operations for them, it doesn't matter. It's almost having like the best basketball player on your team. But if the coach sucks and calls the wrong plays, it doesn't matter. So the onus is on me to set up operations so they succeed. So we use Asana. That's a free tool out there. Yep. Asana, you could like record videos, upload pictures, and I write the detailed like a script for them. And so it could be something like, hey, this is how to pay the cleaners. Well, you go to this website, go here. This is the account and you're going to do it twice a week, right? And so when you start doing that for every little thing in a short-term rental, because I self-manage these, I don't use a property manager. There's probably over 200 processes out there once you finally put it on paper. But the best thing is if you do it initially, then once you keep acquiring properties, you just like just line them up right under those same examples.
Rinse and repeat. You already have all the data and all the videos recorded. You get to say, refer to this kind of a thing.
Exactly. And then at a certain point, they get pretty good and I'll acquire a property and I'm like, hey, we just acquired a new one. Can you just add this other property to it and then just copy and paste, maybe change the address here a little bit, but we're going to try to use the same exact products, the same cleaners if we can, and so on and so forth.
No, that's awesome. That's really fascinating, especially because, again, you set all this stuff up. And does your wife get involved? Does Tanya get involved in kind of the support of the VAs and the acquisitions of these short-term rentals?
We do. I mean, we meet with our virtual assistants like once a week. We actually just had it. Today's Wednesday. So we meet every Wednesday. Okay. Actually, right now we're meeting every other Wednesday because at a certain point, it's on autopilot and the meetings get awkward. Like, well, there's really nothing to talk about here other than let's review. So that's the one thing. If you have your virtual assistants, just meet on a regular basis, especially when you're first setting it up. Maybe you might even need to meet every other week, especially if you're building them up and they don't have the experience. You know, over time, what we want to do is we need a little bit more income to hire more people. Ideally, we'd like to have 3 virtual assistants working for us full time. So that way there's no gaps. And then at that point, we can, you know, vacation whenever we want to and be completely hands off. Right. That is the goal.
Got it. And you mentioned in the beginning, you're trying to figure out getting yourself out of the healthcare space. And are you trying to transition into full-time real estate?
I think so. I mean, my passion is still there at bedside. Like I still really enjoy it. That's very gratifying for me. I work with premature babies and a lot of them like make it out of the hospital. And you're like, oh, okay, that was really cool of me. But there's obviously the initial financial goals. So ideally, I want to have about $25,000 a month of income coming in from my all my real estate stuff. I'm almost there. I'm really close. So that way I could pay my mortgage, my expenses, utilities, kids are going to college. I'm going to have to purchase health benefits now. So I came up with that number and I said, okay, how much money do I need? Well, let's just double it and give us a little bit more of a buffer. So that number is around $25,000 a month. And that would allow us to hire more virtual assistants. Right. So we could be a lot more passive. But maybe if I go part-time, I don't know. It depends on what my passion is. Another passion of mine is helping other healthcare workers because I see so many healthcare workers getting burnt out. I mean, they were burnt out before COVID. They're burnt out even more now. And I think there's a better way. So my goal is to help more healthcare professionals get into becoming financially free with real estate. So if I see that calling, I could spend more time into that too. So
yeah, no, I mean, that's part of the reason why I started this podcast. I was not brought up in a real estate investing exposed family, right? I was kind of brought up in the normal, get a good job, buy a house, have kids, and then hopefully have enough money in your retirement account when you do retire. And then I read a book and flipped the script. And so now my goal is to kind of help people, not necessarily specifically in the healthcare space or any space, really just people that didn't get exposure to real estate as an investment option. And it's not just for the rich and famous. Everybody can get involved, whether you're passive or active. There's a lot of people that I invest with me through some of the syndications that I do that are similar to your position. They love their job. They love what they do. They make good money. They don't want to go full-time into real estate, or they don't want to become active. They just want to be passive and generate some additional income. So that's a great why and a great kind of calling that if it does go down that road. What are some of the other things you're working on now? Well, I guess, first of all, how many short-term rentals do you have now? And then what's some of the other things that you're working on?
Yeah, so we own 6 short-term rentals. Like I said, we started 3 years ago. So not that long ago. And that's the cool thing with short-term rentals. You only need a handful to become financially free. But we really like the hospitality aspect of it. And I networked my butt off during COVID. We were all on Zoom calls and meeting people from a distance. And I met a lot of different investors and met some with the similar goals. So I started a fund and now we're purchasing hotels. And we have our first hotel. It was a 76-unit hotel in Bentonville, Arkansas. A lot of this stuff, Justin, is random. Like if you told me I'd be in Tennessee or Alabama or Arkansas, I'm from Southern California and most of us can't locate those places where I invest. But you never really know where you're going to get. You work your butt off and you get lucky. You put yourself in there.
Sorry, how did you get into I want to start a fund. But instead of using that fund to buy more short-term rentals, you're like, oh, let's pivot and do hotels. Like, how did that come about?
Well, so like I said, my tax lady was telling me to get into short-term rentals. I tried to get into multifamily. And so the thing is, like, I always wanted that commercial asset. Because commercial assets, I think, like, that's really where you level up your game. That's really where, like, huge wealth is. And you could do very well with the single family space. Not knocking that at all because it's worked out well for me. But true wealth is in the commercial space because you could infuse, you know, you could bump up that net operating income.
Yeah, force appreciation and all
you
that.
You could force like really easy with simple solutions. And so we really fell in love with the hospitality aspect of short-term rentals. So with us, in our mindset, instead of going into multifamily long-term rentals, we said, why not get multifamily and just short-term rental them out? And then someone said, oh, you mean like a hotel? And I said, okay, let's take a look at that. And so I just start networking and finding other people that are doing it and seeing if it was going to be the right fit for me. And we're trying this out and I'm actually really enjoying it right now.
I guess unless you own short-term rentals in the same market, it's kind of like a competitive landscape where your short-term rentals are killing, so to speak, the hotel space. So where are your short-term rentals? Are they all in the Smoky Mountain region or...
Yeah, so I own 3 in the Smoky Mountains that's the Eastern Tennessee, and I own 3 in Gulf Shores, Alabama. So I remember telling people, like, I always wanted a beach home, and I said, hey guys, I'm going to get a beach home. They're like, oh, where? Like Newport, Santa Monica, here in Southern California.
Right.
And I said, no, it's a beach in Alabama. People are like, Alabama? I had no idea there was a beach. Anyway, it's 3 of them in Gulf Shores, Alabama, and then the hotel is in Northwest Arkansas. And not competing, like,
Yeah. No. And how did you find the hotel? That's very interesting.
We actually won it in an auction, but 2 of our partners in the fund, they actually live in Bentonville, Arkansas. And Bentonville, Arkansas is like the home of Walmart, and Walmart's pumping so much money into that region. So we love that market. And lo and behold, there was a hotel that was coming up for auction. We're like, auction? Well, you know, it's probably ran down or whatever it was. But, you know, hotels aren't for everyone. It was an investor that bought it, I think, 3 years ago. And it just wasn't for them. They wanted something a lot more passive. And yeah, we won it in an auction and we won it for $3.6 million and it appraised for $6.5 million. And so like day one, we had almost $3 million in equity without even have to increase the NOI. Like this is already, we're getting it like 40% off right off the bat. So
how do you underwrite a hotel? Like, because obviously it's like 76 units. Is that right?
Yeah, 76. Yeah.
It's like 76 short-term rentals, essentially.
Yeah, very, very similar to the multifamily. I mean, the cap rates are a little bit higher. That's the one difference. Yes.
Got it. Very interesting. And then is the fund based on one investment or is it like a pooled fund where you're going to just go out and just continue to buy other deals?
Yeah. So it's a pool. It's a blind fund. And so we will go out there and buy more short-term rentals or hotels, ideally hotels. But if we can't find them, we go and buy short-term rentals. I actually just came back from a trip underwriting and visiting a ton of different short-term rentals. Both of them are really difficult right now. And so just with the interest rates going up and the fact that short-term rentals, there's been a lot more competition and a lot more investors that have gone into that space. So it's been very tricky. And what I find is I'm way conservative with other people's money versus mine. Like I would have bought a ton of these with my own money, but you know, I got to look out for everyone else's money there. So
yeah, I definitely feel the same way. I take a little bit more risk with my own money versus somebody else's hard-earned money. You definitely want to make sure you're protecting that as much as possible. From a short-term rental space, because I'm interested in the space, you're saying it's difficult right now to find deals that pencil, that work. Is that right?
There's something called ROE. It's not just all about ROI. It's all about ROE. So return on energy. So some of these will pencil out. It's just how much more energy are you going to put into it? And is it worth it at that point? So about a month ago, Dallas just banned short-term rentals in all single family residential areas, right? And so some of these areas that you're looking to invest in, you're like, is it going to be a pain in the butt to really make this work? And at this point in my career, I'm financially free from that. And I don't feel like I need to work that hard for it anymore. Yeah. I want stuff a lot more passive, right? Like I started investing more passive initially, and then now I'm active. I already did all the hustle, the active, and it's now it's like, okay, let's get stuff a lot more easier. Cause I don't want to be caught up. If in short-term rentals, if you're caught up doing way too much work, you're not going to want to grow.
Yeah.
If one short-term rentals, yes, it might cash flow you, you know, like most of mine were cash flowing $5,000 a month. If it's cash flowing $5,000 a month, but it's giving you so much headaches, it's not worth it. Find something else. So sometimes they do pencil out. Sometimes it's just not worth the headaches.
That's always been one of my concerns about the short-term rental space is just the regulatory situation that happens, and it can be neighborhood wise, like an HOA has a new president come in and they ban, you know, short-term rentals. And then if you have a short-term rental and you bought that based on, you know, a rental rate, you're not going to be able to rent that out as a long-term rental to and cover the same amount. So that's always been my concern. I'm sure there's ways to figure out which areas are more friendly or less friendly to short-term rentals, but that's always been one of my little like scared points when it comes to the short-term rental space as opposed to multifamily. So
yeah, yep. Me too. Interesting. Like the first one I bought, there's 42 homes in that HOA. Every single one's a short-term rental. So sometimes there's these communities where every single one is a short-term rental. Some of them will regulate where it can't be owner-occupied. Like it has to be short-term rental. And so those ones, I really like those because I don't want to deal with like, hey, my neighbors are way too loud and the homeowner next door is calling you or calling the police on you. There's definitely those areas. There's a lot of them. I mean, I don't want to live next to one. And I'm a short-term rental expert, you know, but it would be a pain in the butt. So I could see where people's concerns are, at least the people that are living in the community.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of a short-term rental community. That's super interesting where you've got just a bucket of houses that are all STR. It's interesting.
Tons of them in Orlando, but even in the vacation rental markets, like the Smoky Mountains, there's definitely like every single home in those communities.
Very interesting. So crystal ball, we're recording this late July, 2023. I guess, what are your thoughts on the rest of this year? I guess still looking at deals, but kind of being a little bit more selective. When do you think you'll be really kind of gung-ho and back super hard in the market?
It's all up to the Fed. Like they just increased interest rates, I think today, 0.25%. Interestingly enough, here in Southern California, things are going over asking. And I think it has to do with the lock-in effect. Like a lot of people that have refinanced or bought homes at 3% interest rate. Some of them, like me, my home is 2.75%. I'm never letting that thing go.
Right? Yeah.
And so it just creates this unbalance of supply and demand. A lot of people that are not willing to sell their home. So you only have the, like this small amount of homes that are available for sale. And there's still always people just naturally moving, or it's time to buy a house because they're married and they want to, you know, set up roots, or they're moving because of a job. Those people that need to buy a home, and there's only a few homes. And so the prices start going up. I'm always in buy mode, no matter what. If the deal pencils out, it's a long-term investment play for me. It's just a lot more difficult, and I just got to work harder and to find those deals.
I don't know the stat, and I'm not going to say it correctly off the top of my head, but I saw something the other day that somebody was talking about new home sales versus existing home sales, and existing home sales are at the lowest point in a long time, just because of the fact that, to your point, you have a 2-3% interest rate, you're not going to sell that house. So if everybody was selling their houses, like, there'd be more existing home sales. So that's super interesting that if you want to buy an existing home with a lot and all of that, there's not as much out there on the market at the moment. Just supply is super low. Right. So it's interesting. And then your fund, are you in raise mode? Are you kind of looking at other deals? Like, it sounds like you just closed on this 76 units. How does that work? Are you still looking at hotels?
Yeah, we're still in raise mode. We'll probably be in permanent raise mode there. So yeah, we've walked away from a couple deals. Like I said, I'm a lot more conservative and I don't want to risk people's money like that. And to me, it was a little bit more risky. Multifamily deals, or even, you know, commercial deals, they're hard to come by to begin with. And then to close on them, you know, it takes a lot of energy. But we're always looking at those deals, always trying to get them. Single family homes are abundant. Like I said, we're being very selective right now.
Yeah, so it's good to kind of lie in wait as opposed to trying to force a bad deal, right? I'd rather not buy something or lose a deal than force it and make it not a good deal as far as that goes. So, well, Alex, man, it's been super fascinating and interesting to hear your story and walk through it. As we wrap up here, I have a 3-pack of questions that I ask everybody. So let's jump into that.
Let's do it.
So what's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you on your real estate investing journey?
Advice was probably my grandma, just to buy. And I already saw what happened with her. Like, we're immigrants. And I saw that she was generating much more income than the physicians I was working with. Mm-hmm. Right. And it was like, oh, okay, why don't I just do that? So it was more just someone telling me to invest in real estate and just stick with it. And it was going to be a long-term investment.
Got it. No, that makes sense. So, second question, what is your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
Okay, so I don't like real estate books because, to be honest with you, I get bored with them because it gets too much in the detail. I like motivational books. So the thing is with me, the one book I listen to probably like every 6 to 8 months is Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins.
Oh, yeah.
And when I listen to that, it's kind of like, oh, no more excuses. Just motivate yourself and just get to work. So Can't Hurt Me, David Goggins.
Great book. Did you listen to his newest one?
I was actually listening to it on the way home. I just drove back from Phoenix, Arizona to Southern California. So I just downloaded it and was listening to it on the way home here.
Yeah, I think it's just as good, if not better, than Can't Hurt Me. But yeah, definitely after I read, or I typically listen to them because the listening is better because it has like a podcast feel to it also.
Yes.
And it's like, I feel like a piece of crap after walking around my neighborhood and listening to this where he would be running or carrying a log or something like that. So that's fascinating. All right. So this will be interesting. So last question is, if you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life just off of the passive income you're generating from real estate, what would you do?
It's really interesting because when I've answered that question, people are like, well, you don't need much money for that at all. If you made $2,000 a month, you would live that life. And it's probably true because I'm really simple. I mean, you're talking about going to the gym in the morning, doing a small hike with my wife, taking the kids to school, waiting for them to come back and just having a dinner. And then every weekend, do something fun with them, eat out or go somewhere. You don't need that much. And I think initially, like, I'm starting to invest. You have all these material things that you want. You want a nicer car, nice house, and you want to travel. But at the end of the day, I'm a lot more simpler than that. And it's just like, hey, just stay home and hang out with family.
No, that's great.
I'm boring. Sorry, dude. I'm boring.
No, I mean, you've got a couple of passion projects I'm sure you'll dig into as well once you hit that number. But no, man, Alex, it's been great to connect with you and learn about you. How can people find you, reach out to you if they want to learn more about hotels or short-term rentals or what you got going on?
Find me on Instagram. I'm posting a lot on there about real estate and a lot of like dumb stuff out there. Like, I took a driverless car this weekend. It was a Uber and that was kind of scary. So I keep it light on social media. So it's at The Real Alex Sabio at Instagram. Or if you're a healthcare professional listening to this, join my Facebook group. I give free daily tips, real estate, mostly short-term rentals, but I give a lot of different like tax tips that I've learned, etc. And I host meetups. But the group is called Healthcare Professionals Investing in Real Estate, and we're on Facebook.
Awesome. Alex, man, really appreciate the time. Great to meet you. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.